Well, for many people, visiting a national park in South Africa is high on their travel bucket list. The thought of seeing zebra, cheetah, or giraffe roam freely across vast plains and through big scenery may well be a lifelong ambition. You might long for the chance to immerse yourself in a landscape dotted with acacia or thorn trees, scenery you've only seen so far in the movies. Most people have heard of the Kruger National Park, but South Africa boasts 22, covering around 4% of their total landmass. And Roxanne Reed has visited most of them to research her book, A Walk in the Park. In a few moments, you'll hear about park highlights, when to go and what to eat, and what not to drink. Roxanne says there's something of interest for everybody.
We've got everything from Kalahari Desert, mountain desert in the Richtersveld, to coastal parks. The Garden Route Park is coastal. We've got a park called Golden Gate Highlands National Park, which is the only park in the country that preserves grassland. So a huge variety. For a first-time visitor to South Africa, the two that are absolute musts are the Kruger National Park, because that's your big five park, you know, where you can see lions, leopards, elephants, rhino, buffalo, cheetahs, wild dogs, the whole safari experience. And then to add on to that, and as you talked about, also a coastal experience and a beach experience, an urban experience. The other one is Table Mountain National Park. Now, Table Mountain also is an icon for South Africa. Everybody knows about it. But they're not really as certain of all the attractions in Cape Town. And Cape Town is quite unusual in that it is part of the national park. It's surrounded by a national park. So you can go walking in the mountains. You can go to the beaches. There are lovely walks at Cape Point Nature Reserve, which is also part of the Table Mountain National Park, where you can go and walk on the beach and discover old wrecks from the 1900s. You know, huge variety. But at the same time, as you mentioned, winelands, you're in the winelands too, and you can get that bit of experience. So as I say, just to sum up, Kruger National Park and Table Mountain National Park, the two non-negotiable. And if you're traveling by road, there's a few in between that you could include.
Is it generally safe?
Kruger National Park is probably the most dangerous. Kruger National Park and the Addo Elephant Park in the Eastern Cape. The Addo Elephant National Park has the big seven. So it's got the big five plus whales and sharks in its coastal section. But in terms of safety, there are very strict rules. For example, you may not get out of your car in the Kruger National Park. You may not walk around to take a photograph of an elephant. And it's pure common sense because it's unfair on the animals to have these people come and invade their space. And B, it's not safe because, you know, they might react in a way that you would prefer them not to. So the rules are quite clear. The camps in the Kruger National Park are completely fenced. And, you know, from that point of view, you don't need to worry. But certainly sticking to the rules of the park is very important. People like to open their windows and hang out the window to get a better photograph. Not on. Have to stick to the rules.
Just looking at the park's own website, there are all sorts of activities and ways to see some of the parks, including going on game drives, guided walks, wilderness trails, mountain bikes, 4x4, backpacking. Are these types of forms of access and immersing yourself in the park, are they available across all of the parks? Are they specific to certain parks?
I wouldn't say that all of them are available in all of the parks, but certainly there's a wide variety of experiences in each of the various parks. So, you know, Kruger's probably the most diverse. All the other parks have their own activities, and usually there are game drives or sunset drives, bush walks, walks in the desert, you know, those kind of things are definitely freely available. The mountain biking is available in some of the national parks, unguided in certain places like the West Coast National Park, which I didn't actually talk about in the book. but it is available there and in the Tankwa Karoo National Park, where you can just go and do your own thing, because there are no dangerous big, and you know, the big predators aren't in evidence in those parks. But at Kruger, there is one camp, Olifant's camp, where you can actually go with a ranger with a gun and a guide, and they take you out on mountain bikes. So you're really immersing yourself in the bush, and it's totally safe. I mean, they've been doing it for something like 8 or 9 years now, and they've not had any bad experiences.
Some of the parks, I believe you have to spend more than one night in them. Is that correct?
Well, I would say you have to spend more than one night in every park.
But there's some regulations, aren't there? There's some regulations that actually insist upon.
Yes. To my knowledge, there is only one that applies to, and that's the Galagadi Transfrontier Park. And that's purely, you have to stay two nights in the park. And that's purely because it's trying to avoid people using the park as a shortcut from South Africa to Botswana or from South Africa to Namibia. So you don't want people racing through the park, you know, to get to a closer border. And that's why that rule was introduced.
Now, in terms of wildlife, because it's such a massive country anyway, the range of what you can see, I guess, does vary in the parks also, of course, because the different nature of the parks, different height above sea level, the sort of topography and flora and fauna. So are there certain parks which are synonymous with certain forms of wildlife? If you want to go and see rhino, for instance, is there one you should head to more than any other?
Well, there are big five parks. I would say Kruger is definitely one of your choices there. The Addo Elephant Park has got rhinos. Marikele, which is in Limpopo province, that also has rhinos, for example. Those are the big five parks that I can think of off the top of my head. And then there are other parks that specialize in certain animals. In the Karoo, near Craddock in the Eastern Cape, there's the Mountain Zebra National Park. Now, that was formed in the 1930s specifically to provide a refuge for mountain zebras. I think there were about 11 at the time. And now there's something like 700. So although there are other animals there now, and lions and cheetahs have been reintroduced in the past sort of 8 years or so, it was specifically created for a refuge for the mountain zebra.
How does the appearance of the parks change? Because I guess at different elevations, the landscape looks different. I noticed that the Great Karoo is described as an unforgiving landscape, which sounds quite foreboding. Are the other parks similarly striking in appearance?
I think each park has its own landscape beauty, and it depends what you like. I love the Galagadi Transfrontier Park, because that is your typical red sand dunes and open sort of semi-desert landscape, but with the red sand. And you get lots of lions and cheetahs and leopards and all that kind of thing. So that's a particular kind of experience. There's also a mountain desert on the border of South Africa and Namibia in the Ice Richtersveld Transfrontier Park. And that is so beautiful. It's very, very stark. You know, don't go looking for green grass and lush trees. But it is so stunning in its own way. And the Golden Gate National Park, the grasslands, depending on what time of year you're there, it's green, green, green in summer. It's usually snows in some parts of the park in winter. People in the UK don't believe it snows in South Africa, but it does. And then in summer, after they've burnt the grass, you know, it's a control measure, they turn this beautiful mauvey pink colour. So really, in terms of landscape, it's one of my favourite parks.
You've dispelled the myth from that Band-Aid record where they have the line, "There won't be snow in Africa this Christmas time," with that.
Yeah.
Now, I gather from reading the book, you're not too much of a fan of excessive heat, is that correct?
I'm not too much of a fan of excessive heat, no.
So for other people with a similar constitution, where would you recommend?
My favourite time to travel is May, June, July, because that is our winter. And even in Limpopo province, where you have the Mapungubwe National Park, the Marikele National Park and the Kruger National Park, you probably get temperatures of round about 26 to 28 degrees centigrade, and that's in midwinter. And to me, that's wonderful. I mean, this past week, which is now our summer, Kruger has been experiencing temperatures in the high 30s and early 40s. That's not my thing at all.
And I guess from what you've said in the book, you need to pick your time to visit. You were, I get the impression, rather disappointed at the number of people swarming like locusts when you went to one of the parks around Christmas time.
You choose your time carefully and your place. That one is particularly near to Port Elizabeth in East London. So at Christmas time, it's very, very popular. If you were to go to one of the more remote parks at Christmas time, you wouldn't have the same experience, because also they don't have the same infrastructure. So there are not as many people that the park can absorb. If you don't mind that sort of thing, obviously you don't have to worry. But, you know, my favorite thing to do is to go into the wilds and where it's quiet and deserted. So that kind of thing really just gets up my nose.
And talking about infrastructure, I mean, if you are going to stay in the parks, what kind of facilities are available for staying over and for things like, well, just normal everyday things like food and drink?
Most South Africans who go take everything that they need with them in terms of food. But there are exceptions. A lot of the parks do have restaurants in the camps. Kruger National Park is your best bet for that. If you don't want to cater for yourself, you just want to get off the aeroplane and zoom off to the Kruger National Park without having to worry about anything, that is definitely the park to do that. By contrast, the Richtersveld or Galagadi, it's very much no restaurants, no cell phone signal. It's very much a wilderness kind of experience. So you would need a 4x4. You would need to be completely self-sufficient. We don't travel in the Richtersveld, for example, without a satellite phone, just because if you do have a breakdown, it's so quiet there that you might sit there for 2 days before somebody else comes past.
For any British travellers going there, I mean, that sounds a little scary. Is it quite obvious to people that you're about to enter the park, and are there sort of park gates where you'd have information about the vastness of the park so people don't accidentally end up stranded or in a difficult situation? Is it obvious you're entering a park zone?
Absolutely. I mean, every park, with the possible exception of the Tankwa Karoo Park, which is still kind of being gathered together from different farm areas, all the parks are quite clearly demarcated. And I don't think the ones that are remote, like I'm talking about the Richtersveld, you wouldn't be passing by that in any case. But when you book in, you're given the rules and regulations. And my advice to anybody who is looking for a wilderness experience like that is just to have a sat phone with you and to make sure that you have the number for the reception at the main camp, because the rangers in those parks are absolutely wonderful. If you give them a ring, you say, I'm in trouble, I'm in the middle of nowhere, here are my GPS coordinates, they'll be there, they'll help you.
In your book, there's a lovely term where you describe looking at the stars shining through tree branches like fairy lights. So is there a lot to be gained from seeing the park after sunset?
It's one of my favourite times in the park. If you want to see game, you have to go on a guided drive with a licensed guide. You can't do that on your own in these parks at night. But just to be in the camp and to watch the sunset and to listen to the different sounds of the night. I mean, you might be sitting on your stoop having a glass of wine and you can hear spotted hyenas in the distance or lions roaring. You know, that to me is wonderful. And also some of the drier landscape parks like the Galagadi, the Richtersveld, also the Ahrabis Falls National Park. The skies are so clear because you're in the wilderness and there's no light pollution from cities nearby.
Driving conditions, what are they like within the parks? Because you do describe, in a, again, a very graphic way, driving on sand roads, which is something that I would have thought a lot of people, certainly from Britain, would not be familiar with at all.
Well, again, you know, you choose your parks carefully. If you've never driven on sand roads, Table Mountain National Park has a lot of tar roads. Kruger National Park, you can actually go there for a month and not go off tar. I like the little side roads and the loops that lead off the tar and those sand roads. But the quality of the roads in the park is quite good. They're very clearly demarcated. If it's a 4x4 only track, you will see that. You can't stumble onto it by mistake and find yourself in difficulty.
You say that sand roads make your tires sing. That sounds interesting.
It's one of my favourite feelings, yes.
Can you describe what it's like?
Well, it's just that sort of hum. Tar is a very harsh sound when you're driving on tar. Sand roads, if they're not corrugated, sand roads are just, there's a soft sibilance to them. It's wonderful. You have to do it.
Now, we're touching back on the food and drink. We talked about, obviously, taking your own provisions. I'm intrigued by what you say about learning how not to vomit up coffee with scum on top. Tell me about that.
Oh, that's just some of the picnic sites in Kruger. That's when I was talking about that. They have urns and water that comes up from a borehole, and it's just so disgusting. But what we do is we get water from the camp and we take it in a thermos for ourselves. You know, it's that's much easier. But food also, depending on which park you go to, if you go to the Garden Route National Park, which is all along the Garden Route on the southern coast of South Africa, between Storms River and Wilderness, you will love the food because, again, those parks are in and around sort of towns. And the food in Knysna Wilderness and those areas is wonderful. The food in Cape Town, I know people from Paris who come here every year to pig out on the stunning restaurants that we have here in Cape Town. So if you're visiting the Table Mountain National Park, that's something to keep in mind.
You have written about some of the farmers' markets and local provisions that are available. I mean, again, are there any really distinctive things or memorable things from the farmers' markets, maybe pickles, preserves, jams, or fruit that you've had that you really do recommend that people sample?
One of my favourite things to do as I'm going to and from national parks is to stop at, you'll see in South Africa, we call them potstalls. They're farm stalls where they sell local produce from the local farmers or the farmers' wives who've made these pickles and preserves and jams and that. And it's just such a lovely experience. They often have fresh baked goods as well or dried fruit. And it's a lovely thing to do along your road trip. It kind of breaks the experience, gives you a chance to stretch your legs. And then also you've got some food for the road.
What's your recommendation then? What would be your must-buy item?
I love dried fruit. So any of the, depending on the season, if they've got dried mango, that's my absolute best.
We've talked a lot about the wildlife. Are there any perhaps examples of previous civilization or some historic sites within the national parks?
Absolutely. There are two that are easy to visit in the Kruger National Park. But my favorite of all of them is at Mapungubwe, which is right up north near the border with Zimbabwe. In fact, the park borders both Botswana and Zimbabwe. And it's a very important cultural site because it actually predates Great Zimbabwe, which everybody knows about the Zimbabwe ruins. And this civilization predates that. So we're talking around about 1200 AD, 1220, 1290 AD. And it's also important because it proved with some of the things that they have uncovered on archaeological digs, they've proved that the people there were trading with the East and that it was the first class-based society in Africa. The kings and the queens were buried on the top of this Mapungubwe hill, and all the commoners were buried at the bottom of it. So there was this division, which we're not used to in African culture.
And out of all of the living things, whether wildlife or flora and fauna, I mean, what is the most amazing thing in all your travels that you've seen?
I think one of my favorites is the baobab tree. It's such an icon of Africa. And you get quite a lot of them in the northern parts of the Kruger National Park. And Mapungubwe also has baobab trees. And they're beautiful. I mean, there's a myth that they were actually thrown down from heaven and their roots are up in the air because that's what they look like. They're very big and spready. And people in South Africa do the strangest things with them. Because they still survive, they're about 80% water, although they're so huge, they can be, you know, massive girth, like 30 or so meters around. You could probably join hands, 15 or 20 people, and stand around the bottom of one of these trees. And because they're 80% moisture, even if you carve away a hole in the middle, and elephants love to do that, it will still survive. So there's odd examples all over the country where somebody has, you know, created a little bush bar in the middle of a baobab, or there's a toilet in the middle of a baobab. I think it's a very special tree.
What is your favorite? It might be a bit mean asking you to choose when you've written about so many of them, but is there one that you go to again and again, or one that you've got a softer spot for?
I would say probably the Galagadi Transfrontier Park, simply because game viewing is very good there. There are no rhinos or elephants or buffalo, but you see lions, you see wonderful birds, raptors. It's terrific. And more than the animals even, it's just the spirit of the place. It's so vast and it's so open. And it's so pretty in, you know, after the rains when all the flowers come into bloom, that it's almost for me like going to church. You get some sort of sense of spirituality from it. And, you know, I begin to understand how the San, the Bushmen, used to think about their land, because I get that same feeling for the Galagadi.
Roxanne Reed's talking about her book, A Walk in the Park, and you can find it on Amazon.